You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Ali Moreno in the studio. So much to get through today. Later on in the program, Pablo Zabaleta will be here to reflect on Atletico Madrid's 2-0 victory over Barcelona. We kick things off, though, in the Premier League. Manchester United taking on Everton. Cristiano Ronaldo not in the starting 11 for this tie. Would make a difference early on, though. Martial would open the scoring for Solskjaer's side. How Everton very much got back in the game in the second half. Lovely goal from Andros Townsend. And meaning it finished United 1, Everton 1. Let's welcome Don Hutchinson, shall we? And Jan Arge-Fjortoff to the show. Jan, United in crisis.
Yeah, you would say so when you see the timeline on Twitter, when you see all critics. What is interesting on Twitter as well, when you see the analysis, let's say social media, is that it's all his fault they don't win at home, but it's not all his fault that they win away from home, which is quite interesting. Having said that, Dan, I think that when you see Manchester United at home now, and I've seen them also live against West Ham, although there was another game in the League Cup, or another team, is that you see a team consists of good individual players, as they have, check, but then turn them into a great team. I don't see that. And I think what is lacking then is the philosophy. So if you watch Manchester United today or some of the games they've done this season, you're thinking, how do they want to play? You know, and I'm not sure about that. And we discussed it earlier in the week. Cristiano Ronaldo say, I want the ball quicker up front. Things like that. You saw against Young Boys Bern when they 1-0 up, and you think that a good team will just control the game. But Ole Gunnar and Manchester United at the moment not able to do that.
It's a good point Jan makes, Don, isn't it? And as the game developed, when Pogba, obviously, Bruno, Ronaldo, all on the pitch at the same time, great individuals, but there wasn't much cohesion there.
Jan's absolutely spot on, and that's my takeaway from watching Manchester United over the last four or five games. They've not controlled any of the five games. Their last five games, they've given everyone a chance. And what they are is they're a team full of unbelievable stars and unbelievable ability, but if you're playing against them with good teamwork, and Rafa Benitez showed today with cohesion and teamwork, you can beat them or you can draw against them, because that's what Man United are. Villarreal should have won by four or five in the Champions League. They absolutely tore Man United to shreds, apart from a last 20-second goal from Ronaldo. So this team, the squad, should I say, is an incredible squad to work with. But unfortunately, Ollie's trying to be a little bit smart and a little bit clever. He doesn't know his best 11. And I'd love to ask the question, why would you rest Paul Pogba and Ronaldo before an international break when you're just going to send them away anyway? So why wouldn't you go strong today? And then you've got that group of players to work with, and they're going to get a little bit of rest, barring if they play time for the international team. So really strange one to rest some big players before an international break.
Where do we start? Where do we stand, Don, with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, his future at the club, and what he needs to do to get this team ticking? Because everything I'm hearing is the quality's there, but the coaching isn't.
Do you know what it is, Dan? I think with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he's always going to be the manager that's one game away from a disaster. And all you have to do is look at their next seven games, and they are incredibly hard. I mean, it's one of the toughest runs I've seen for quite a while. So we're going to be talking about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer when he pulls off a win, and we're probably going to be talking about the starting 11 or the individual brilliance that they've got in their team. And it's rife. It's incredible. But when he loses a game, we're all going to say, well, he's not an elite manager, which he's not. He's not a Guardiola. He's not an Ancelotti. You know, he's not a Jurgen Klopp. He's a manager that's trying to find his way. But what we have to say is, this is his team. You know, before Rafa Varane and Sancho Ronaldo come in, I think it was an easy out for the likes of us to say, well, he's building. No, he's not won a trophy, but he's building. What you have to say now is, this 100% is an Ole Gunnar Solskjaer side. So the pressure's on.
And the question is, I suppose, Jan, is what evidence have we seen to suggest that he can find his way with this side?
second place in the Premiership last season.
Yeah, I understand that, but then we're looking at where the other teams were and COVID and all that sort of stuff.
Well, we could use that argument anyway, but I mean, I agree with John. It's for all people there to see, and Ole Gunnar will always be under pressure. You come from Molde Football Club, you're going into the Manchester United job, you don't come to England with the same kind of thing that like the club or Guardiola come to the there. But at the moment, we have to see what Ole came to do. He came to be a man who stabilized the ship. And I've said that before. He went to bed one night and was happy to get the 3-star players, and he wake up and he got to win trophies. And nobody will know that better than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He's been there under Ferguson. Ferguson, who said that to be second in the league is a disaster for this club. Ole knows the score. Ole knows that he has to win football games. Ole knows that he soon could be sitting in Kristiansund, his hometown in Oslo, in Norway, fishing. He knows that. It's nobody else who knows that. Will he try to do everything he can to sort that out? Of course he will. Will it be typical to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer with all these great games coming up now to win 3 or 4 of them? Spectacular? Of course he will, because that is been his regime all way. But today, and some games now lately, it's been an evidence that they don't seem to have their own play. And they are punished for that for Everton today. By the way, Everton, what a goal Townsend did. Yeah. I mean, great counter-attack, brilliant. And it kind of took the Manchester United defence apart. So, deservedly taking the points, although Manchester United were the better team. And they have, last point, Dan, when they play away from home, they can play more on the counter-attack. Today, they have the ball possession was around 72%, so that you have to make the game yourself, and then they are struggling. So they have a lot of the ball, but I'm not sure what they're doing with it. And I agree with Don as well, saying, why are you resting the star players? All his answer was, Cristiano Ronaldo and myself know better than the football experts. So here we go, Don.
Yeah, shut up, Don. What do you know? Wow. Last word on this, Don. You said Rafa Benitez hiring at Everton was a disaster and it would all end in tears.
Oh, OK.
Wow. I mean, it's only took you about 2 or 3 minutes to mention that, Dan, so that's you are slipping. I knew that question was coming. Where I based that on, Dan, and I wasn't basing it on Rafa Benitez being a bad manager, far from it. What I was basing that on, and it was nothing to do with the Liverpool connection, I just thought the timing of it. You know, he's not going to finish in the top four. Then all of a sudden, you know, he's trying to compete for a European spot and he's looking with the likes of Arsenal, the likes of Tottenham, the likes of Leicester, the likes of West Ham. And I never quite got the start. I never seen the start that he was going to have. So what I will say right here, right now, I'm eating humble pie.
Wow.
But let's just judge. Oh. Let's just judge him at the end of last season. Because at this point, last season, Carlo Ancelotti had Everton in the top four and he had them sitting in first and second. So there's a long way to go just yet.
Right. So it can still end in tears, Don. Mm.
In about 5 or 6 years' time, like whenever it might be.
Meanwhile, Chelsea taking on Southampton today. Chelsea, in the end, getting it done. They 1-0 up. You kind of thought, oh, they're going to cruise here. Saints have got a penalty in the second half. 2 late goals from Werner and Chilwell sealed the 3 points. Should we talk about the red card, Don, which I suppose is what was the turning point at 1-1? Was it a red card, in your opinion? Obviously, VAR took a look and intervened after initial yellow was given.
Yeah, this was a sliding doors moment, because if I'm James Ward-Prowse and Mendy give Jorginho a hospital pass, he give him an awful pass, and James Ward-Prowse thought he could nick it, and the referee gave a yellow card, Martin Atkinson, in real time. And then where I was a little bit disappointed in the VAR team, they told Martin Atkinson to go to the sidelines to go and look at the incident. And all they showed him was 4 or 5 super, super slow motion angles of it. And I checked with one or two of the VAR guys afterwards, and they said, you're a little bit critical of the VAR team. Why so? And I said, well, why so? Because what's the protocol? What are Martin Atkinson's meant to see? And they said 3 things, point of contact, slow motion, real time. Well, they didn't give him any real time whatsoever. So we all know you can have a freeze frame. Right. And you can do a slow motion, and any tackle can look horrendous. So I leant on the side commentating on the game that it should have been a yellow.
Ali?
Well, I 100% disagree with
really?
Don. I think it's a red card. He's late.
It's a slow motion.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That slow motion is what's really what really did it for me? No, it's a challenge in which Ward-Prowse, he's late, he's showing the bottom of his shoes, he gets there late and takes out Jorginho. I think it's a red card.
You have the deciding vote, just, Jan.
Well, Ali's just said slow motion, done it for him.
Don, you've had your bit. Jan, you have the deciding vote.
Whoa, this is a tough one. I agree with a slow motion, but I think that when you see it in that position, you can put into hospital. For me, it's a red card.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Don's wrong. That's what we've decided.
Again. Once again.
Well, Ali said slow motion, done it for him. Take away slow motion. It was a yellow card.
Don, no, but Don,
that was
but
Venezuelan
Don.
Tongue-in-cheek,
yes,
I believe.
Yes, that was a little bit of sarcasm, Don.
Okay.
Can we just go back to the, I think we've got it, the disallowed goal I wanted to talk about as well, Don, because if you're talking about VAR and decisions maybe going against Chelsea, they went far too far back for this, didn't they?
Well, I spoke to Chris Foy after the game and he was talking about the phases of play and he was talking about the time. Well, time doesn't come into it. And the most important thing that Chris Foy said to me, is there any point in this move where Southampton had a chance to reset?
Yes.
That's the big, that's
yes,
the big
just
question.
Then, when there were four defenders in the box.
But if
that's what you see, that's what you see. I mean, what we have to say there is Azpilicueta on Kyle Walker-Peters, that is not even a debate. That's a foul. That's down the Achilles. That's a foul. Now, if you think Southampton had a chance to reset, then that's exactly what you see. But in terms of the foul, it was a foul.
Jan?
But it's just unbelievable, again, that it's happened to Timo Werner. I mean, thank God. Yeah. You knew that straight away when this situation happened. If there were going to be a goal now, it would probably be VAR, and it's going to be Timo Werner scoring the goal. And if he didn't get a goal at the end, people would send him to Benny Hill show. I mean, this is always happening.
Oh, nice and relevant,
Jan. It's a big old reference, I guess. But Timo Werner will think, here we go again. And thank God he got his 2-1 goal, which he took very well, by the way. And a great pass for Azpilicueta, giving that back after his VAR situation. But as Don says, there is no rule for timing. So either you have it in the same attack or you don't. So that is fair enough. We can agree or disagree with the rule, but that's the rule.
Jan obviously mentioned Timo Werner eventually scoring. There's something really likeable about Werner, isn't there?
Yes, but at this point, you feel like you're pulling for him. Yeah. Like, come on, Timo! Come on, Timo! Score, baby! Yes! Timo! Timo! I love you, Timo! Look, when you see a player struggling with confidence, like a player that is used to scoring goals and now all of a sudden a tap in is hard work for him, and he finally gets a goal, yes, for those of us that have been out there on the field, you want to see success for the player. You want to see the guy being able to produce at the level that he once did, because it's a player that has been there, that knows what it takes, and yet the confidence is lacking. So to see Timo Werner score an important goal for Chelsea, I think it's a good thing, unless, of course, you're a Southampton fan.
But, Jan, overall, just watching it from the outside, the thing that Timo Werner and what makes him so personable and likeable is that he never hides.
He never hides, and he's always honest. When he was linked to Liverpool, I made an interview with him after the game they had RB Leipzig against Tottenham. I never met a more honest guy in my life. He said, I want to go to Liverpool. I love Liverpool. And I was thinking, the head of press, won't you do anything? And they didn't do anything because that is Timo Werner. The good thing about Timo Werner playing under Tuchel, and I've talked with Tuchel about this, he loves to have Timo Werner there because he stretched every team. Mm. Every team have to stand a bit lower on the pitch so they can kind of get a more advantage of him. Thomas Tuchel loves him, and we'll just see what Timo Werner will be. There have been talking about him going to Borussia Dortmund if they lose Erling Haaland. He's also been talking about Bayern Munich, but remember, he more or less signed a contract with Bayern Munich and he didn't go there. And to make his story a bit more likable, this is the only guy who played in the Champions League away from home, and you have to go off the pitch because his ear, there was too much sound in the stadium. I love this guy, my favourite player. Absolutely.
Don, obviously Chelsea coming into this game off the back of two consecutive defeats. I think we're all expecting maybe them to blow Southampton off the park. They didn't. Mm. They are top of the table. Everything okay?
Yeah, everything's okay. I was looking at the numbers before the game, Dan, and they're close to scoring 3 goals a game. I mean, they've only conceded 0.3. They've only conceded twice this season. So you look at them and what they are, they're defensively very, very solid. Now, I was impressed with Ralf Hasenhüttl's approach to the game, because he more or less looked at the Man City blueprint from last week, and then he looked at the Juve blueprint from midweek in the Champions League, and Southampton hunted them down in packs. They pressed them high up the pitch, and it took them late to get the couple of goals. So Southampton coming away from the game will think, how on earth have we lost that 3-1? It was a never a 3-1 game. But you get the feeling when you're watching Chelsea, they've got so many gears to go through. The bench was ridiculous today. At any given time, Thomas Tuchel could have looked at his bench and it was ridiculously strong. A little bit of worry for Romelu Lukaku the last couple of games. He only had 8 touches against Man City in the first half. In the first half against Southampton, only 9. So Antonio Conte was a little bit critical in the Italian media, saying Chelsea are not using him properly. So that's a little bit of a concern and something of a worry. But you still watch Chelsea and you still think so many clean sheets and so many attacking players that they're going to be absolutely fine.
So Chelsea, top of the table as we go into Sunday. But of course, Liverpool could leapfrog them into first with a victory against Manchester City. That is the standout game from the Premier League on Sunday. Let's take a look at how the bookies have things set for that clash at Anfield. Liverpool 2-1. Manchester City then favourites going into Anfield at 7-5. A draw 5-2. Let's get some thoughts. Jan, prediction for this one?
Well, I've never understood the odds in England, so that is the first start. Secondly, I think that the Liverpool have impressed us. It looks like Jurgen Klopp, although he hasn't got any big players in and he hasn't spent a lot of money, he has used all his skill to get the players going again. So for me, it's a Liverpool win.
Liverpool win. Don?
Ooh, tight. Tighter than what Jan's saying. I mean, there's no Trent, so James Milner will probably play at right back. I'm going to go Liverpool win, but only just. I'm going to go 2-1 Liverpool.
Okay. Are you going to go Liverpool as well, Ali?
Absolutely not. I'm going against whatever Don is saying. That works for me in the past. So
wow.
I'm going to go with a Manchester City win. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Manchester City win. Rafa Benitez, manager of the year.
Whatever Don says, you go the opposite and it'll work out for you.
What I can guarantee is that we'll be here tomorrow to bring you everything you need to know about that big game at Anfield.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Big game in La Liga today saw Atletico Madrid beat Barcelona by 2-0. The damage really done in the first half. A lovely counter-attacking goal from Diego Simeone's side would be finished by Thomas Lemar. And then inevitably, had to happen, didn't it? Luis Suarez, just before the break, scoring against his old club to give Atleti all 3 points. Pablo Zabaleta into the show. Pablo, this was a performance from Atleti which really could seal the deal, couldn't it, for Ronald Koeman's future at Barcelona?
Absolutely. Another top performance from Atletico Madrid. I thought they were exceptional tonight. You know, I just love them in the way they compete, you know, how they go into these kind of games and you know, they kept a clean sheet again. Great performance in the first half. You know, they always been really dangerous going forward. Then second half, they just sat back. You know, they defended the whole second half. But brilliant performance from Atletico Madrid.
Barca got 2 weeks to find a new manager, haven't they?
Look, you look at this game, and let's start from Atletico Madrid's perspective. There was some pressure on Atletico Madrid because they had been struggling in the league and you weren't quite sure as to what version of Atletico Madrid you were going to get. And one of the things that we have said about this team is, you know what, they managed to make everything uncomfortable for themselves and for other teams. This indeed was a comfortable match for Atletico Madrid. Barcelona were never really a threat in the attacking half. And to be honest, they were never really a threat in the defensive half either, because optional defending all over the place. Ronald Araujo gets himself out of position. Nico is late covering. Pique is nowhere to be found. Second goal is a reaction to that first goal in that Ronald Araujo doesn't want to get tied to Joao Felix because he just got turned for the first goal. But then there are no tracking runs out of the midfield. Pique is just hanging out, hopefully hoping that somebody gets back in time. 2v1 situation. And then the time and space for Luis Suarez. He scores his goal and it's 2-0, and it's comfortable for Atletico Madrid. So comfortable. You never really got the sense that Barcelona were ever going to be dangerous enough to threaten Atletico Madrid. And you could see in the body language of the players that they never truly believed they were good enough to compete in this game. Now, it's one thing is we don't believe. Because you know what? We see the games, we watch the games, we're not in that locker room, and we think, you know what? This team is not good enough. But when they don't believe, that team out there in the field, when they don't believe, that's when you know it's time to go for Ronald Koeman.
Pablo, what was the key today to Barcelona's poor defensive performance?
Well, they have been really poor this season defensively. I mean, not just today. It looks like they're having so many problems defensively. Sometimes they try with three at the back, with five. Today we saw playing again with a back four, but still so many problems. I mean, look at the space. You know, they always looks very exposed at the back. Only three players today from Atletico de Madrid. They create a lot of problems to them, you know, by making runs in behind and all that. So, obviously, they have been probably in both ends of the pitch, to be honest, because also we don't really see any player of Barcelona at the minute, you know, taking chances or, you know, making a difference for them in the final third. So, you know, big, big problem for Barcelona at the minute.
For Atleti, Pablo, obviously they spent a lot of money on Joao Felix and he's been disappointing, to say the least, so far. I thought this was one of his best performances we've seen since moving to Atleti.
100%. From my point of view, I think it was probably the best I have seen from, you know, Joao Felix play for Atletico Madrid. Unreal performance. You know, but I say before, he's a player that he got so much potential. He just, you know, he need that belief to on himself to, you know, to keep a place in the starting 11. And you know, he was everywhere tonight. And you know, probably he needed that performance, you know, to get some confidence back, to show to Simeone why he wants a place, you know, in that Atletico Madrid team with Suarez next to him. I think both been absolutely fantastic. So great, absolutely wonderful performance from Joao Felix tonight.
Finally, Pablo, I learned, of course, going out with you that conveniently you're one of those people who goes out without cash. So I would have to lend you the €5 to put a bet on. Would it be for...
Don't say that.
Would it be Real Madrid or Atletico?
I'm waiting for you in Barcelona.
Oh, Dan, I haven't got any cash on me. Sorry. Big Premier League rich star, no money. Who's your money on, Pablo, to win La Liga? Real Madrid or Atletico?
Now listen, it's too soon. It's still
Don't give me that rubbish. I mean, you've got to make the bet now. Who's your money
on? I would say that probably Real Madrid is the team that, for me, got a better team. You know, also, you know, Ancelotti. I love him as a manager as well. But probably two of the biggest contender. But for me, Real Madrid got a better chances to win La Liga this season.
Pablo saying that Real Madrid will definitely win La Liga.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Pablo. As always, it is Espanyol against Real Madrid. And then the late game sees Granada take on Sevilla.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Meanwhile, in Italy today, let's start off, shall we, with Juventus just about getting it done. Locatelli's goal in the 86th minute, proving to be decisive between the two sides as we welcome Gab Marcotti into the show. Max Allegri just about can breathe a sigh of relief going into the international break, Gab.
Yeah, he can. I mean, look, and they played well. This Torino is completely different from last year's Torino with Ivan Juric. They go out there, they attack. It was, I thought, a really entertaining game. He started out with Chiesa and Moisken up front because, obviously, no Dybala, no Morata. And this really, we could have seen a lot more goals early on. And then, in the end, it was that late Manuel Locatelli goal that made all the difference between the two teams. But I thought this was one of the better performances we've seen this season from Allegri's Juve. Now, if you want to say, well, the bar was set low, fine, go ahead, say it. But it's another 3 points, and it's a clean sheet.
I wasn't going to say anything, Gab, honestly. I was going to say nice things about Locatelli.
And so you should, because, you know, we've talked about how he needed leadership in this midfield. You know, Weston McKennie's had a hard time. Missed, I thought, a very good chance today. And then Rabiot has been playing better. But as you know, you never know what you get with that guy. Ramsey, of course, sick note. So in the end, it was Locatelli dropped in the middle of it. And he's the guy who's really taking things by the scruff of the neck. And if you think about it, you know, Bonucci was on the bench today. Chiellini did play. But you talk about leadership. Where's it going to come from? Well, it's coming from these guys. It's coming from Chiesa. It's coming from Locatelli. Hopefully, it'll come from De Ligt as well, if you're a Juve fan. And, you know, little by little, they are moving to where they need to be.
Elsewhere, the defending champions in action as well. Inter Milan taking on Sassuolo. They found themselves 1-0 down. Fought back, though, in the second half. Checo and Lautaro Martinez proving what proved to be the winning penalty, Gab.
Yeah, amazing. You make a bunch of substitutions. You send in Edin Dzeko, and all of a sudden he runs rampant. This was a weird game for Inter because they could have been several goals down. Samir Handanovic could have been sent off. He then made a tremendous save when they were 1-0 down off of Jeremy Boga. I mean, really an incredible save for a guy who's been really under fire from Inter fans. And then, you know, you open the floodgates, you send on, you empty your bench, in comes Dzeko, and eventually they outlasted Sassuolo. But it's a big win, not a good performance for, really, I'd say the first 60 minutes until the subs came on. And I think Simone Inzaghi needs to think about this. He needs to think about people like Çalhanoğlu, maybe Correa as well. Where does Çalhanoğlu fit in this team? Does he fit at all? Because, you know, the performances are sliding now. And Inter, at least they got the points. But let's give Simone a little more time to figure this out.
Well, that's the point I was going to make, Gab. You talk about the performances sliding somewhat after a good start. How much is it down to Inzaghi?
I think at the beginning, they were punching above their weight. You know, I said before, it's going to be really, really difficult. You lose two of your three best players in Lukaku and Ashraf Hakimi. You know, you're going to run into trouble. And they got those results early on, and that was great. But ultimately, you're talking about making a pretty big transition into essentially a team that's perhaps more of a counterattacking team, a team that presses intermittently, you know, a team that in many ways is very different from what you had last season with Antonio Conte. So leaving aside the fact that qualitatively, I think you've taken a step back, also tactically, there's a lot of work to be done. And, you know, they won those games at the start of the season and people said, oh, great, look, it's Simone Inzaghi, no problem, you know. But no, you've lost some big, big people and you need to figure out to find the right balance, find the right tweaks. Personally, I don't think Çalhanoğlu fits, certainly not if he's going to play in a three-man midfield like he did. So they need to find the tools around them. The great thing, though, is the spirit seems to be good. Lautaro seems to be solid. Barella is on top of the world. Again, another really good performance from him. So I think there's enough there to go and win the Serie A title. They're certainly in the mix. Now the attention obviously focuses to getting out of the Champions League group stage after that disappointing draw with Shakhtar Donetsk.
Gab Marcotti, as always, thank you very much for your thoughts. Of course, plenty of action in Italy on Sunday. Napoli looking to extend their lead at the top of the table away against Fiorentina. The most eye-catching game, got to be the late one, isn't it? Atalanta against AC Milan. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Action in Germany today. Borussia Dortmund with a 2-1 victory over Augsburg. Meanwhile, Borussia Mönchengladbach also grabbing the win. Pressure off Jesse Marsch for the moment as well for Leipzig as they picked up a 3-0 victory. Jan is back with us. Jan, you're in a hotel room in Dortmund, am I right? Because obviously you went to the game. No Haaland, no problem.
Exactly. Having said that, they created six or seven chances. I spoke to Erling during the game. He was sitting not far from me. I think that he wants to be on that. I don't think he wanted to be on that pitch. But there is something about Dortmund this season. They're not up to their best, but they still managed to win games. And today they started very well, getting that penalty. But still, they're playing too slow and they don't know how to use Malen. Did well when he got the penalty. Are they using him as a hold-up player? Are they using him as a counter-attack player? So Dortmund should be happy that they're up there with so many points because I've more or less seen all their games live and they have not been convincingly.
Who did you speak to after the game, Jan?
I spoke to Rosa and I spoke to Malen. And I asked Malen, I've seen all your games, but I'm not sure what's your best position. And he said, I'm not sure either. I do whatever the coach tells me. So that was an honest answer, I must say.
No, we like an honest answer. Meanwhile, for Leipzig, as I mentioned, Jan, after a tough opening hour, a little bit of breathing room for Jesse Marsch now going into the international break.
Yes, and he has been a bit under critique. I mean, I've been talking about this is not the best. And Ralf Rangnick, the professor of Red Bull that has always been there, said, I would never let Nagelsmann go. And I thought that was the biggest supporter of Jesse Marsch. He won against Stuttgart 6-0, gave him, say, a bit bonus. Then a terrible game against Brugge in the Champions League. Mm. And now he had to win against Bochum. Took him 70 minutes and then it ending up with a convincingly 3-0 win. And Andres Silva, they bought him for like 30 million euro, came on as a joker today and scored. But he has changed a bit around and he hasn't got the best out of him. So that was a very, very important win. This is the understatement of the day about Jesse Marsch.
He's not close, though, is he? Yeah, and as much as we talk about, he's nowhere near the brink of getting sacked.
You know, Oliver Mitzlaff, he is the head of RB Leipzig, and he is a big, big fan of Jesse Marsch. No, he's not under fire under pressure to be fired. I mean, his club will support him. But I've said that because Ole Gunnar as well and Jesse Marsch. It will never happen that a club will sack them. This is just going to be the people in and around them. But they got to win today. And if you have a look at the table now, they somehow got a connection going upwards. The thing is with Jesse Marsch, his way of playing is so optimistic and so full of risk. So at their best, they look like world beaters, universal beaters. And at their worst, they look terrible, to be honest. And they played Bochum today. Bochum lost 7-0. At Bayern Munich, so this was not the great opposition, but he doesn't care. He needed a win today, and he got it.
Jan Agafjortov, as always, thank you very much for joining us. Just a reminder, the Bundesliga continues tomorrow. Mainz against Union Berlin. It's followed by Bayern Munich against Eintracht Frankfurt. Then the late game, Bielefeld taking on Bayer Leverkusen.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It was a bombshell in the world of women's soccer. There has been fallout, and this is very much a developing story.
Lisa Baird, the commissioner, should resign immediately.
I do not see how Lisa Baird can continue as the NWSL commissioner.
Now, that was Seven Herc on Thursday's Football Americas. This, of course, in response after Meg Linehan and Katie Strang's extensive report in The Athletic that detailed allegations of sexual coercion and abuse by the now former North Carolina Courage manager Paul Riley that spanned his tenure with multiple teams. Well, yesterday, the NWSL released the following statement. The National Women's Soccer League on Friday has received and accepted Lisa Baird's resignation as its commissioner. Now, also, as a result of that report, all five matches that were scheduled for this weekend have been postponed. The NWSL Players Union said last night, we made the difficult decision to ask NWSL to postpone this weekend's games to give players space to process this pain. Now, and before she resigned, Baird had signed off to postpone the game, saying, recognizing that trauma, we have decided not to take the field this weekend to give everyone some space to reflect. Well, for more on this, on quite the 72 hours in the history of NWSL, Julie Foudy is with us. Julie, first I got to ask, just your reaction on it all.
I mean, just what you said there, Dan, it's just been an awfully sad and heart-wrenching 72 hours in women's soccer. And obviously, as you heard Sebastian and Herc saying, there was no way forward for Lisa Baird. So her resignation on Friday was not unexpected. I don't think there was any path forward for her, given she'd lost the trust of the players. And essentially, this league is in a critical moment. It's a reckoning for them because there are so many things in so many different areas going wrong, and they have lost the trust of the players and as well the fans. There's so many irate fans, given all that's transpired in the last few days, in the last few years, honestly.
Julie, what hit you the most from this report?
That, once again, it takes so much for institutions, leagues, companies to believe the women, to believe the players, that these two players, Sinead Farley and Mona Shim, came to Portland Thorns in 2015 and filed a report with their human resource department, courageously stood up, and nothing was done. And Portland did say they didn't renew the contract of Paul Riley, but the problem is he got hired months later by Western New York, another professional team. So he goes on to another job. And so this is something we're not just seeing in women's soccer, of course, but the fact that it takes these women having to really risk so much to come forward to Meg Linehan and Katie and telling their story shouldn't be the case. And so it's understandable the angst and anger of all these players in the NWSL right now.
Can NWSL recover, Julie, from this?
Yes, because the product that is out there is the players, and that's the gift that is the NWSL. Is there so many tremendous players, there's so much talent, and beyond that, so many wonderful role models. And so I actually think this is a chance for the NWSL to clean out its shop and culture and create something that is inspirational for the next generation of players out there. And all the pieces are in place with the players. And now they have to, and this is the reckoning they have to come to, they have to get the right people in. They have to set protocol and protections in place for the players. They need to first and foremost listen to the players, because right now and in the past, it's been a lot of talk and not enough action, not any action, to be fair. So this is something the players are going to be monitoring. They're in the middle of a CBA negotiation and they have a lot of leverage right now.
Julie Foudy, as always, thank you very much for your time. A lot more on this story as it develops on the latest edition of Football Americas, which drops here on Plus on Monday. El Tráfico then on Sunday, LA Galaxy taking on LAFC. That game live on ESPN. Coverage starts at 8 p.m. Eastern. That is it. That brings us to the end of a very busy show. Lots going on today. Thank you very much for joining us. If you want more, of course you want more. Extra time is next. Jan and Don back alongside Ali to answer your tweets. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your questions. Ali with me here in the studio. Jan is with us, as is Don. Jan, you're in a hotel room in Dortmund. Is that right? Is it exciting, luxury, five-star job?
Without stars as Dortmund today.
There's no bed, just a door. You got to sleep on the carpet, Jan. Don has added a little bit of
greenery.
shrubbery to your background, Don. Yeah. I noticed. What inspired this?
No, I do like a little bit of greenery, but the paint and decorator has been in, so have a look, a little change of colour behind me.
Right.
I think that's quite a nice little touch. So it's getting there, the garage. It's looking pretty good.
It's nice, kind of the vine over your left shoulder as well. Bit of creeper. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, well, yeah. See, he's got vine, fern, and then a tropical palm tree.
Yeah, I like it. Now, before we get to the tweets, there's a question I wanted to ask you guys off the back of what Luis Suarez was saying. Sid was talking to him after the game, where, of course, he scored that goal just before the break, and Sid said to him, it looked like you were enjoying the fact kind of picking your spot. And he said, well, I know Ter Stegen, I know Piqué, I've played with them for so long. It was nice to be in that situation. I'm just wondering, Jan, from a striker's point of view, does there come a time where you play against someone so much that you kind of know their attributes?
Don Hutchinson knows Simon Tracy, a big fat goalkeeper for Sheffield United. And I played against him. I went to Barnsley and I played them a month after. And I met him in the tunnel. And the fatty said to me, Jan, I know all about your chips, you know, your chips.
Yeah.
And I said to him, Simon, the only chips you know about is all the chips you're eating. And we put After 20 minutes, I came one against one and I chipped him. 1-0, Barnsley against Sheffield United. So, yes. Absolutely.
Where is he now?
He's a good guy.
Not in a hotel room in Dortmund.
Now he's slim now. He's running around in Sheffield. So I'm a good lad.
I love that question. I love that question from Sid when he said to sort of Luis Suarez, how are you feeling?
Yeah.
And the word that come to mind was smug.
Yes.
I was just thinking smug.
Yeah. Dom, you played up against a lot of your old teammates. Did you know what they were going to do? Did it help you?
Yeah, of course it does. You do your research and you play against players who you've played against a million times before. So you know their weaknesses, you know their tricks, you know which side they're likely to go on, if they're going to try and take a shot to right footer. You know, it's obviously, you're going to favour their little trick where you try and show them onto the left side where they might be a little bit weaker. But I think it's more so, I think, for goalkeepers and centre-forwards when they come up against each other quite a lot.
Yeah.
If a goalkeeper's come up against Jan a few times, he might know what his favourite technique is and vice versa.
Let's try and get through the rest of Extra Time without body-shaming people, shall we? Ali, will Barca qualify for the Champions League next season with or without Koeman as the manager?
They will qualify for Champions League next year.
Ooh.
You're not a believer?
Oh, well, what have we got? Real Madrid, Atleti.
Uh-huh.
Guaranteed. Sevilla are looking good this season.
Yeah, Sevilla, Valencia. And then after that, it's a little bit of a drop-off.
It's only four spots.
Well, I know. So I think Valencia may not hang in there for the length of the season. Sevilla will. Villarreal may be another team that could challenge.
Yep.
I don't think they are consistent enough, and that'll be the problem for those teams. Barcelona will do just enough. It's not going to be a banner season for Barcelona. We know that, but enough to get into the top four.
Here we go. Let's trigger Jana Agafjortov by asking Don this question.
Okay, here we go.
Don, what's the percentage of Oli being United manager at the end of the season?
That is good. The percentage chance of Oli being the manager at the end of the season, I'm going to say 70% in his favour.
Wow, that's quite high.
Wow.
High.
Very high.
It might be a change in the summer.
Right, okay. But you think you'll see it through 70%? Higher or lower, Jan?
I will go a bit lower.
Against your boy.
Controversy.
Knife in the back.
I wanted to say 50-50, but then he raised the stake, didn't he, Don? So I have to go to 60-40, because I think that it's not about what Manchester United... If you ask me what Manchester United want to do, they would try to stick with him the rest of the season. But, you know, with everything around him, there is a chance that at some point it won't happen more. And you see with Old Trafford, maybe the fans will turn around and everything. And you won't do that to a legend, would you? And so there will be a time when you say, well, maybe it's time to go home now, Ole. So I would say 60% that he will stay for the rest of the season and 40% that he will be fired. Are there any percentage left then, Don?
No, I think that's it. You covered it.
No, that's it. Look, Tom's percentages. He's all over it these days. What would Ali's reaction be if the goal was cancelled through VAR like Werner's was, of course, in the first half?
Well, much like Timo Werner, and the reason I like this guy so much is much like Timo Werner, there were points in my career in which I was the non-goal scoring forward.
Right.
And I was missing tap-ins like Timo Werner. And so
if VAR had cancelled it out, would that have...
For a player that needs a goal, that desperate for a goal, that would have been heartbreaking. But you saw on Timo Werner a positive reaction. And yes, it was a tap-in. And yes, it's a goal that he should be scoring. But guess what? He hasn't been scoring those goals. So therefore, you feel good for Timo Werner. It's a good thing for him, a good thing for Chelsea.
Meanwhile... Let's bring this up again, shall we? Remember when Rafa Benitez was hired as the Everton coach?
Yes.
Don said it was a terrible appointment.
Yes, terrible, he said.
He said it would all end in tears. Uh-huh. Shocking decision from the Everton board. Nadim's horse tweets, Don, do you see Everton securing a top six place this season under Rafa Benitez?
Ooh.
Is Andros Townsend the man who can help achieve a European spot for next season? Took his goal well today, didn't he, Don?
Took his goal well, and I did predict that he would be a fantastic signer because I've watched him a lot over at Crystal Palace, and I'm amazed that Patrick Vieira. No. I'm amazed that Patrick Vieira didn't go to Andros Townsend and lean on him because he's experienced. Because what he is, Dan, he's a type of player that will sacrifice himself for the team. And the way he started has been sensational. He believes himself a lot more.
Benitez.
He's had a terrific start of the season. He's playing a lot further forward. I think he's been a brilliant signing.
What about Rafa Benitez? Top six, Don.
Say again?
Top six. Top six. Ah. It's going to be between sixth and seventh, I think.
Wow.
So it's on.
That's not ending in tears, is it? That's not ending in tears.
That's not where Everton want to be, but I mean, that would be a great
It's an improvement. It's a stepping stone. You said they'd get relegated if they hired Benitez.
I did not say they'd get relegated, Daniel.
You said, what's the one book on your shelf there, Don, by the way?
I've got loads of books there.
I can only see one.
Oh, there's loads there. I've got a Howard Kendall, which will never go down.
No, but we can't see that. No, the one over your left shoulder by the book. Yeah. That one, that one.
That's keeping up the trophy.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Italian Job, Gab Marcotti.
No! Yeah! Never been opened. That's it.
It's on its own. I mean, there's loads up there.
Yeah, we can't see any of those, Don.
Well, I'll drop... I mean, do you want me to move something so you can see it?
I'm just saying that we...
No, you don't. there are no books in the jungle, so that's okay.
Let me just take a moment to bring this little beauty into shot.
Well, we didn't ask about that.
Yes. Well, that's the Craig Burley.
Is that when you scored against England? Milking that.
That is, that's the team.
Milking
that's
that.
The team at Hampden. Don.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Where's Burley?
Fantastic.
Where's Burley?
Right, well, we don't need to see him, he's off. Right, next question.
Where is he?
Did you ever give away a penalty and score in the same match? Ali? Chilwell, of course, doing that today.
No, I don't think so.
No?
I wasn't back there defending all that often, so no.
Jan?
There's a lot of things I've done in my life, but I've never got a red card or never give away on a penalty, in fact.
Wow. What about Don Hutchinson?
No, but a funny story. When I played for Sunderland at Goodison Park on the last day of the season, and Peter Reid had organized a trip for the players to go to Magaluf, and I had tonsillitis. I had tonsillitis. Jan's laughing because Peter Reed's a disciple of Howard Kendall, so he knows exactly what's coming.
Isle of Man.
So Peter Reed organized a trip to Magaluf at the end of the season, and we were going straight after the Everton game. But unfortunately, I got ill and got tonsillitis, so I couldn't train all week, and the lads really thought I was throwing one in not to go to Magaluf. So on the day of the game, I got, I use that very loosely, from Sunderland to Everton, and Peter Reed assured me if I made the effort to travel, he wouldn't start me because I wasn't fit enough to start. He would put me on the bench. So I agreed with that. Unfortunately, two or three players got injured. I had to go on. I then scored an own goal and got a standing ovation from the whole of Goodison Park just so I could fly to Magaluf the next morning.
Oh, nice. Was it a good week?
Was it worth it?
Was it? Yeah, exactly. Was it good? How was Magaluf?
Well, it was brilliant until 2 days in when Andy Gray turned up. Peter Reed was obviously there and all of his coaching staff. And they were all giggling and smiling at the bar. And I knew something was up. So they called me over and I walked over and Peter Reed said to me, you've got two options. You can either have a two-week wages bill for getting sent off, two-week wages fine for getting sent off.
Right.
Which was 40 grand.
Bloody heck, Don. Oh, or, money.
What's the other option?
Or the option, the other option is you pick up the tab for the whole of this drinking day for the managers, for the staff and all of the players.
Wow. You've got to take the latter pounds. One. Definitely, Don, yeah?
Yeah. So you know what I was like with my mathematics? I was trying to work out 40 grand. I was trying to think, what's going to cost me the least amount
wow.
of money?
And so how big was the tab in the end, Don?
9,000.
Oh, not too bad.
Oh, now, you have to enlighten
me. Well, I mean, not too bad. I mean, I travelled to Everton to play unwell. I mean,
Don,
I'd like to think Don, I was doing the club a favour.
Don, you're on 20 grand a week. No one wants to listen to any excuse that you've got forward, to be honest, mate. Yeah, there you go.
Enlighten me. What is this?
Magaluf?
Yes.
Magaluf is an interesting destination.
I can tell you, Ali. Magaluf, Isle of Man, these are the places that English football managers use to take their players.
Yeah.
Getting totally drunk, drunk.
Yes.
Probably go home and play a game, lose 5-0, and afterwards they were talking about how did they mark on corners. Nobody's speaking about Magaluf. It was all about myself and Don Hutchison, before the playoff final, a game worth $1 billion, euros, everything. We went to Isle of Man. I asked the manager, can I bring something to training 6 days before the game? And he said, F off.
Wow.
I mean, I had to go out. And it's terrible. That is the book of Howard Kendall, our love. And be in peace, my friend Howard Kendall.
Yeah, Dan,
how would you explain like Magaluf spring break?
Like, where did
Panama City.
Like those sort of plays. Just carnage. Absolutely nothing good happens in Magaluf.
Okay. All right. So hold on a second. So did you go to Magaluf?
No, I went to Ibiza, which is a little classier.
Yeah.
A little classier, I would suggest. Sid Lowe is just back from Magaluf now. He went there quickly, post Atleti in Barcelona. Sid, what conversation have you wandered into here?
Well, I was just trying to work out at which point all of Don's teammates said, yeah, I'll have the very, very, very expensive champagne, please.
Yep.
No more beer. If he's paying, where else the champagne? I mean, honestly, 9 grand. You got away with it really quite lightly there. Which, by the way, tells our viewers something. It tells our viewers something because these days, footballers will go to Dubai. And you're not getting a day's drinking for 40 grand in Dubai. Now,
no.
In Magaluf, where it's not only carnage, but it's also incredibly cheap.
Yes.
You can just about get away with it.
Yeah, and definitely none of it is brand.
It's not a classy place. It's watered down. It really isn't.
So are you saying this is the sort of place that I would not thrive in?
Oh, my God. It's fantastic.
I love it.
Oh, it's brilliant. Anyway, let's talk about soccer.
What?
Sid, you've just spoken to both managers after. You've just spoken to both managers after the Atleti win over Barca. You got to start with Ronald Koeman. How was he after Magaluf?
Well, yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, he probably should go. Yeah, I mean, you should try and cheer himself up a little bit. Look, I'm going to be honest, we didn't speak to Koeman. Oh. We spoke to Martin Einstein, spoke to Diego Simeone. We have listened to Koeman, though, because he's done the press conference. He was very down, as you might expect. He'd said before the game, by the way, he'd been asked in the press conference, how are you? And he said, to be honest with you, I've been better. I suspect tonight he's even worse after that. He's quite down. He is quite down, to be fair. And why wouldn't he be? I mean, look, he said himself yesterday in the press conference, and I think he's absolutely right. He was asked what he thought about his relationship with the president. He said, I don't want to talk about that. He was asked whether he knew what was happening. He said, well, no one's told me anything. But look, I've got eyes and I've got ears. And you hear things and you see things. And he knows. He knows, to be perfectly honest. And I hate saying this because it sounds cruel, but it's the reality of the situation. He knows that he's still in the job because they haven't yet found an alternative, because they can't yet find a way of making this happen. Gian Laporta said, we were talking about this pre-game, that, you know, nothing would change after tonight's result. Essentially, that was true. And it was true, of course, because Koeman is already in a position that's unsustainable. The question mark now is just, when does it end? And it feels like after tonight's game, and in particular with it being Suarez scoring, that end is even more imminent than it ever was before. And of course, we've got an international break now, which in theory, at least, should make it slightly easier for Barcelona to finally get this sorted out.
Meanwhile, as you mentioned, Martin Einstein spoke to Simeone, who I imagine is right at the other end of the spectrum after that result today, Sid.
Simeone, and you'll hear this when you see the video of his interview with Martin, Simeone could barely talk. His voice was going. He'd been shouting all night long. He was talking as well about the emotional side of things, the way that the fans responded, because as we were saying before the game, this is the first time that Spanish clubs have been allowed 100% capacity in the stadium. This place was very, very nearly full, really noisy, really exciting, really enjoyable. And Simeone clearly enjoyed it as well. And as he's put it, the team responded, because this is a team that's really struggled this year. Mm. It's a team that's got into a very bad habit of going down in the first half. Yes, they've tended to turn those games around, but it wouldn't always happen. Last weekend, they were beaten away at Alaves. They needed a performance like this. And I thought, certainly in the first half on the left-hand side, when Lemar and João Félix and Suárez combined, which they did three or four times, they were just too much for Barcelona.
Brilliant, Sid. Thank you very much, mate. Much appreciated. Let's just get back to a couple of tweets to finish things off. Don, how concerning is Pulisic's injury record with Chelsea, and how concerning is that for his future?
Yeah, if I was Ronald Koeman, by the way, I'd take that Barcelona squad straight to Magaluf.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
I would.
Yeah.
It is concerning because he is a bit fragile, isn't he, Christian Pulisic? He has been for a number of years. He's just a fragile character. So you want these sort of players. That, you know, we were talking about Timo Werner before and how likeable he is. I think Christian Pulisic's exactly the same, and he's got the ability to be absolutely world-class. But if you're not fit, you ain't going to be talked about as world class. So he needs to look after his body a little bit more, I think, and probably need a little bit of luck as well.
Final question, Ali. Who's going to win El Tráfico tomorrow?
You know, both of these teams at times have been very, very average this season. I'm going to take the LA Galaxy. LAFC just seems to take one step forward, two steps back. So, yeah, LA Galaxy.
LA Galaxy, that's
sure,
it.
Why not?
Jan, you go to bed now. Where are you traveling to tomorrow?
I'm traveling home.
Hey.
I can't believe it. I have to warn my wife. I mean, I'm now, after talking to Don, I probably go to Isle of Man together with Don or Magaluf.
Like, you've got to somehow compare Isle of Man to Magaluf. Yeah, a completely different place.
It wasn't far off, Dan. Dan, it wasn't far off, mate, honestly.
I wasn't far on. I will tell you that trip, going to Isle of Man, that is the most unbelievable trip I've been to in my life. With Howard Kendall at his best.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Thank you very much, guys. Much appreciated. We will be back tomorrow. Wait, you know, ESPN FC on the road to Magaluf?
And who are we taking?
I could possibly go. Stevie.
Who's coming?
Stevie would be so wrecked.
With a tan?
Hey, it's City Liverpool tomorrow. We'll be back here to reflect on that game and a lot more. Be sure to join us.